listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday, the 25th of March 2026. It's a day where the Australian share market surged 1.9%, the 200 having its best day in nearly a year. We'll have the details in a moment with Cameron Gleeson from BetaShares. But first to today's inflation data, which does precede the war in the Middle East and resulting oil price shock, which is still making its way through the economy. The Bureau of Statistics says the annual headline inflation rate eased from 3.8% in January to 3.7% in February. While it suggests a stabilisation, it's still way above the RBA's target band of 2 to 3%. The bank's preferred underlying or trimmed mean measure, which strips out one-off moves, while steady, is still too high at 3.3%. Of course, the war started after this data was captured, and the Treasurer warned that the Middle East conflict would see inflation higher for longer in our economy. A lot of that through the higher petrol price, but interestingly, the petrol price actually fell ahead of the war, down more than 7% in the year to February. The largest contributors to inflation included housing, particularly electricity, up 37% annually, and rents, 3.8%. Food, including meals out and takeaway, up 3.7%, beef 13.5% higher, and recreation and leisure, especially domestic travel, which climbed nearly 9% over the year. So, was the RBA right to lift interest rates before these inflation numbers came out? For that and more, I spoke with Westpac senior economist Pat Bustamante. Pat, yes, this data precedes the war in Iran and the decision to lift interest rates. But with headline inflation easing a little to 3.7%, the headline rate, was the RBA right to lift interest rates a few weeks ago?
So we think so. There was a positive surprise when you look at the headline number. It came in a touch softer than what the market and we had expected at 3.7% compared to the 3.8%. But it's still way too high compared to the RBA's inflation target of 2 to 3%. And when you look at the underlying measure, it went sideways, so it came in at about 3.3% over the year to February. If you look at, I guess, over the quarter, that underlying inflation measure went sideways as well, at an elevated level. So I would say they still feel vindicated on that rate hike, which occurred a few weeks ago, just given the level of inflation at the moment.
So where are we seeing the inflationary pressures? And again, reminding our audience that this data came out before the impact of the war in Iran.
That's right. That's right. And this data is for the month of February. So before the conflict in the Middle East kicked off in March. So, we did see, I guess, in some of those structural areas where there are a few issues, we did see, inflationary pressures remain elevated. So housing's one example. For instance, rental price gains were about 0.4 in the quarter. They were running above 3.5% over the year to the February month. We saw a bit of a deceleration when it comes to construction costs for dwellings, but that still remains quite high. And the issue is housing has quite a big weight in the CPI basket, and that was always a concern that not necessarily we would have a re-acceleration of inflation, but that you wouldn't get that disinflation. It will remain sticky above that 3% or 2 to 3% band. So we've seen some of those structural pressures come through. We also saw a bit of a pickup when it comes to, I guess, some of the recreational items. So the recreational and cultural group in the CPI basket also grew quite strongly over the month and over the year as well. That's putting upward pressure on the overall basket, and that's a sign that demand is running quite robust at the moment. It's quite strong, allowing some of those retailers to pass through some of those price gains.
Okay, let's now talk about what's happening right now. How do you see the war and the flow-on effects of higher oil prices flow through to the upcoming inflation figures?
Yeah, and I guess one of the things I didn't mention is that we saw the price of tradables. So those are the goods where the prices are determined globally, actually came down over the month by 0.3%, and it was only up 1.3% across the year. That's a lot lower than the domestic prices, which grew about 5% over the year. So that was a positive surprise. But we know that that happened before the conflict in the Middle East. So we're expecting to see that, you know, completely change next month as the higher fuel prices flow through to domestic kind of consumers at the Bowson. And at the moment, we're expecting basically headline inflation to be running at close to 5.5% by mid-year. And I guess the concern is for the RBA, it's not necessarily, I guess, that you have that direct impact on the CPI. It's more those second round effects and those interlinkages, particularly if you don't have inflation expectations that are well anchored. It could lead and spill over into other prices in the economy and ultimately be reflected in a higher headline or underlying inflation, I should have mentioned. And that's really the risk from the RBA's perspective. So at the moment, we're expecting a bit of a pass-through from those tradables to non-tradables and underlying inflation. But that's something that the Reserve Bank will be kind of monitoring very closely going forward, particularly if inflation expectations become unanchored.
Okay, so with that in mind, what does it mean for monetary policy?
So at this stage, and obviously this is conditional on how long the conflict runs and what happens to energy prices going forward, but we think that the Reserve Bank will hike again in May. By that time, they'll have the quarter one inflation read. We think that underlying inflation over the first quarter of 2026 will be close to 0.9%, and that leads to a year-ended number of above 3%. So it'll be way too high for the RBA is likely, and we think that the Reserve Bank would go on the back of that. Given if the war doesn't extend any further, we think that's probably enough for the bank to get those inflationary pressures down and help manage those expectations. But there's always a risk that it does go further. It spills over into broader energy costs. And obviously in that scenario, potentially the Reserve Bank would need to hike again, potentially another 50 basis points all up. But that's kind of the risk. But at the moment, we're just expecting the one in May.
That's Pat Bustamante there, senior economist at Westpac.
Insight Now has a dedicated live channel on SBS On Demand. That means episodes of Insight play back-to-back non-stop. Go to SBS On Demand, scroll down to the featured live channels, and then select Insight. It's that easy.
Now to the Australian share market, which had its best one-day gain in almost a year, the ASX 200 surging more than 2% at one stage, closing up 1.8% at 8,534. It means the index is now down 7.2% since the start of the war when it was trading at a record high. It was approaching correction territory just a few days ago. Today, the materials sector rallied, especially gold stocks, Newmont up 9%. BHP added 3.2%. The retailers did well, like JB Hi-Fi, which gained 2.6%. And Drone Shield rocketed 19% today as it continued to benefit from the conflict. Energy was the only sector of the 11 to tumble on the 200. That's as the oil price slipped to below $100 an ounce on hopes of an end of the war in the Middle East. For more, I spoke with Cameron Gleeson, a senior investment strategist from BetaShares. Cameron, we often make a big deal when the market tumbles a lot. So I want to do the same today when the market rises a lot, as much as 2% at one stage today, the most in the year. Run us through firstly what's behind that.
Has been a good day for the ASX for a change. What we've seen today is a positive reaction, largely driven by events in the Middle East. Donald Trump releasing or essentially indicating his reached out to Iran with a 15-point plan, indicated he wants to see a one-month ceasefire. And that's the predominant driver of markets. It's meant that Asian equity markets have had a rally as well as the Australian equity market. The other factor in Australia today is that the February CPI print was slightly below what was expected. But I think that, you know, the key driver here really is the, hostilities in the Middle East and, you know, the potential for a reduction in the more extreme potential scenarios there. So we saw obviously, you know, a good day for the markets broadly, led by materials, but broad based, strong performance. The two sectors that have actually drawn down were energy sector and consumer staples, understandably so in a risk on environment.
Okay, let's break down some of what you've just mentioned. First of all, the oil price now below 100 US. Is the market taking the view now that we might be coming close to an end to this war?
I think it's interesting to look at the oil price and look at oil markets and to try and divine what we make of the longevity of this war. Yes, the oil price is down below $100 a barrel, but we can also look at futures markets, so oil for delivery in the future. And it's notable to see that the price for oil for delivery in 2027 hasn't really moved. What I see this movement in the spot prices reflecting is not so much the expectation that the war will be wrapped up shortly, but that more extreme scenarios have been avoided. When Israel attacked the South Pars gas field, we started to worry about an escalation, a broadening of the conflict. I think with Donald Trump essentially looking for an off-ramp, it shows that the conflict is more likely to be contained. But the period of this conflict is unknown at this stage because we really haven't seen much movement from the Iranian regime looking to bring closure to this particular, you know, this incident.
What I find interesting still is that we're not seeing small moves day to day, especially when we talk about the oil price. We're often talking about double digit moves, 10% one day, 10% down. What do you make of this huge volatility? Because surely someone is making money from all these little comments that the US president says that seems to be moving the markets.
Yeah, look, I mean, it is incredible to see this sort of level of volatility, and it's not, unexpected that we see two-way volatility in these periods. There's a lot of new information coming to market, a lot of variables that, you know, no one really is in control of. So we see this volatility. I can't speak as to, you know, what hedge funds in Wall Street are doing or whether they're profiting. But when we look at Australian investors, we know that most Australian investors will hold broadly diversified portfolios. So portfolios of both stocks and bonds. We do see an increase in activity of investors looking to get exposure to oil, but in some ways they're not necessarily profiting as a whole, but simply putting on some sort of hedge or allocating to an area of the market that has been relatively resilient when other parts of their portfolio have perhaps seen some losses. So I'd sort of case this in, the terms of people looking to diversify their portfolios as opposed to taking an outright bet on oil and selling everything else.
We spoke about the inflation data with Pat Bustamante from Westpac in detail. So let's talk about the market reaction, right? It has eased ever so slightly, the headline rate, but it's still way above the RBA's target. So what's the market thinking it will mean for future interest rate rises?
Well, if we look at what's expected for changes to the cash rate, if we go back just a few days ago, the expectation was that we were going to see slightly more than three cash rate hikes over the coming year. That's been pared back to about two cash rate hikes. I will say, though, I don't believe that this is a result of a slightly softer, although above the band, CPI print. I think this is far more to do with an expectation that the worst case scenarios in the Iranian conflict have been avoided. It's more about the oil price because longer term, that's what's going to feed into inflation throughout the year 2026.
Given what we've discussed today, what are you telling your clients at the moment and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
We're still talking to clients about remaining invested through this cycle. We're talking about diversification, holding a broad range of asset classes, where they believe they need to fortify portfolios. There are a lot of our investors who are very interested in getting exposure to global energy companies or indeed to the oil price, or alternatively other areas that provide some form of insulation like global royalties companies, areas that produce strong cash flows and can be resilient in an environment of higher inflation. The other asset class, which has been really interesting, has been gold. Gold is seen as somewhat of a geopolitical hedge or a safe haven asset, but it has sold off tremendously over the last week, only to rebound today. We think that gold is part of that broader commodity complex that can add diversification to portfolios. But there is a level of volatility in that asset class after a strong run over a number of years now. So it's one to be mindful of when looking to diversify.
That is Cameron Gleeson there from BetaShares, and he wraps up the podcast for this Wednesday. Give it a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Click subscribe, and there's more tomorrow.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
A new SBS music station is coming.
SBS Pop Euro.
Filled with Eurovision hits non-stop.
You want more? Tune in from the 1st of May.
On DAB Radio, online.
The SBS Audio app.
And SBS On Demand.